why did you think there was a need to sort of set up trim for veterans? Was there something lacking, did you feel?
Well, only lacking. I think we need to augment what we've already got. And we've been running ordinary trim, regular trim, I would say, for the Royal Marines and the Naval Service for over 16 years now. But as we approach 2015 and our involvement in Afghanistan changes, I started to think about what we needed for the future. The regular trim, the trim we use now, has served us extremely well, and I think will continue to serve us well. But one has to think about all the people that have left the service. Now, I can't look after all the people that have left the service. There's far too many. But I can certainly do something about the Royal Marines, because we lose, through natural wastage and people who wish to go, around about 600 a year. Of that 600, 450 of them will have seen operational service. And I think we need to make sure they're okay as well.
Can I ask what you think the challenges they will face, how they differ compared to, I don't know, someone who served in the First Gulf, for example, or someone like yourself from the Falklands? I mean, how are the challenges different?
I don't think the challenges are different. I think they are a constant. I mean, for people who've spent a considerable amount of time in the services, their first encounter with the NHS is always difficult. They've had a life where they go down to the sick bay, they see somebody, they're seen very quickly, and they're treated very quickly. Of course, it's not quite the same with the NHS, because it's under more strain, there's more people out there. And even with the Covenant, you know, you have to wait. And this can be a little bit frustrating and a little bit of a challenge for our people when they leave.
I was going to say, that ability to sort of slip straight into a civilian life, if you've spent a lot of years in the armed forces, must be very hard for people, I suppose, or very, you know.
I think as a general rule it is. I have to say, for members of the Naval Service, so I'm looking at sailors and Marines, we are probably better off than our Army and RAF counterparts. Because we have the port scheme, we tend to live in geographic areas, Plymouth, Exmouth, Portsmouth, and many of us have got our own houses. So we're already settled and a part of the civilian community. So it's not quite as difficult if you've been with a battalion in the Army, trekking from place to place, moving home, moving schools for your children. So I think we are better placed to acclimatise ourselves into civilian life, notwithstanding the challenges of NHS and other things as well.
I mean, like you say, I mean, I suppose it is difficult for people to acclimatise, and most people will get on and live their lives to the best of their ability. So I'm assuming T for V is for people who maybe are struggling slightly. I mean, what sort of people would be coming to you and asking for help? I mean, how's T4V work?
Well, it can be people who have got real issues. It can be people who have got not so intense issues, what we might call the worried well. And we can cater for all groupings, so that's useful. For people who have got real issues, we can signpost them into the most suitable agency. People probably don't realise that out there in civilian life, there are charities that want to do things for veterans, want to help veterans. I was astonished that when you look at the numbers, in excess of 850 different agencies that wish to help. Now, for the average serviceman trying to navigate his way through this maze, it's difficult. So what we do is help them with their navigation to get them to march to the correct point so they can get help.
So what sort of things are you teaching? I mean, you pointed, you know, touched upon the core programme first off.
Well, we if we're going to take them through a sort of group support, we would bring them together. We would get them to fill in a questionnaire so we could see how well they were on a weekly or a fortnightly basis. And then they do some relaxation exercises. And the support group meets over five sessions. So each of those sessions, there would be the fortnightly lesson. So we could be talking about sleep hygiene, we could talk about resilience and stress. We could be talking about a whole range of different things, bereavement and loss. Because a lot of our people are getting that time in life where they have to meet and deal with bereavement and loss from loved ones, from colleagues, and it can be, as it is in your youth, a difficult thing to have to deal with. So we deal with these different things on a weekly or fortnightly basis. We also get them to talk on their own topic. We like them to do it in a group setting, but that's not always possible, and sometimes we have to, because people aren't always comfortable speaking in groups, and we put them into pairs, and they can talk to each other. It's like you and I are talking now, and we have topics that we give them. We give them the week before, so they know what they're going to talk about. I don't spring it on them. They can write War and Peace if they want to write a big piece, but generally they do bullets, and they discuss, you know, what they found, what was the best and worst thing about being in the Royal Marines, and they discuss that. What makes them happy? Well, you know, it's a good question, not often asked.
That's true, actually. You've made a very valid point there.
And so we've got these topics. So we go through a 5-session course, and the final one, or the additional one, is, and then they go away for a day out. It's to go to the seaside. Well, not so much a big prof if you live in this area, because you're by the sea, but they could go to somewhere else. They could go to a stately home. We try to make it a non-alcohol day, so alcohol doesn't feature in it, but it's something, and it isn't myself or my team that decide, they decide what they want to do. In the same way as that the rules for the group, they decide. It's very egalitarian in how they conduct it.
I know we touched upon this before, but do you find that alcohol plays a big part in people's, you know, I don't know, this, their ability to come and ask for help in the first place, or, you know, admit they have a problem and also contribute to those problems?
I think a lot of people who have alcohol issues are in denial, and usually it's when they've hit ground zero before they seek help. My observations of Royal Marines is, yes, they do drink, possibly heavier than their civilian counterparts. But one of the things I see in Royal Marines is that they still want to remain fit and able, and they learn very quickly that by excess usage of alcohol, they become diminished. And I was at the Royal Marine Association reunion, and yes, people drank, but they didn't drink to excess, and they didn't fall over, and they didn't become silly. It was just a medium for them to talk about their experiences, and that's useful. What we don't want is people drinking to forget, to cope, to sleep, and that's very negative, and we would attempt to give people help in that direction.
So like you say, I mean, I'm leaving the service now, and you're going to look, and you're going to send me on this course if you think that I have got certain issues that need resolving, and then you've got another assessment a year down the line. And one of the things I've sort of seen is that a lot of people find that they, I don't know, only sort of come forward, ask for help, or find the consequences of stressful action maybe a few years down the line. I mean, how does 1 year help? Is there anything after that 1 year, or is it pretty much you're hoping to get to the crux of the issue and not have it in 15 years' time, you have sort of a breakdown or something like that?
Well, we would see them after a year, and there's no plans to see them every year. But they know where to get help, and we're going to get them straight away into the Royal Marine Association so they can speak to people. I think one of the important things in the Royal Marines is that from they join as recruits, as corporals, as sergeants, as officers, as warrant officers, they are taught about stress, how to recognise it, how to deal with it. Well, so what to that is it reduces stigmatisation. And we say, and it's one of our mantras in the Royal Marines, it's okay not to be okay, but it's not okay not to do something about it. And people do things about it. They do come forward. We did a survey with one of our commander units when they came back from Afghanistan, and we did what we call the rifle companies, the guys who are at the sharp end, the younger element. And from those figures, we took a sample group of 300, 80% of them said if they had any issues, they would go and see the medical officer and get help. Now, that was anonymous. They sat and filled the questionnaires in themselves. words weren't put in their mouth. And I think that's quite a good figure for people. 80% of that sample group would have gone forward to get help. And I think, you know, it shows that the message is getting across.